Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty along with Eric Baranchek, and we're here to talk about the Green Bay Packers' 10-7 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday Night Football. Eric, this was your kind of football game. Or was was there too much scoring for you?
There's a little bit too much. No, I'm kidding. I loved it. I thought the defensive showdown for me is always interesting, and watching how teams are going to attack each other on defense and lining up, with what teams are going to be doing with their motions and things like that, and how they're going to react. And one thing that I thought was really interesting was, you know, the Eagles line were pretty much, you hear a lot of people talk about two shell and all, like, what does that mean? It means they got two safeties that are basically playing over the top, and their primary role is to be able to pick up anything from hash to sidelines on their respective side to make sure nothing gets over the top. And then they play trail coverage with the cornerback, so the cornerback will be underneath and the safety's over the top, and it's pretty tough to get anything really far downfield like Jordan Love and the Packers like to do when they're in that. But if you watch the game closely as the game progressed, they really kind of they showed the pre-snap read was two shell, and then it would it would migrate down to just like a cover three, in some cases cover four. So it was fun to watch. I like that. I like watching what the Packers do and how they attack stuff. So yeah, I mean these kind of games are really fun.
So I let's just kind of start with a little bit bigger picture. I mean, it just really feels like this team is it's not like they're, you know, bad. It's not like it's a disaster, but with the expectations, with the, you know, talent they seem to have and add Micah Parsons, and it feels like they're in trouble. What do you think?
I do. I think they are in trouble. And I think it's, you know, a lot of teams, many teams, you kind of have this opportunity, you know, this spot. You're at this point in the season. So they got to figure it out, you know, how we're going to address the next 7 weeks. How, you know, and in these, here's the part that's tough, Pete. In these next 7 weeks, you got the Bears twice, the Vikings twice, and the Lions.
Yeah, five division games, and that's just huge.
It is. It's a brutal deal, you know, so it's going to be a gauntlet here. What I think the reality is, they just got to kind of get the basics, come help their offensive line, put them in positions to be successful. I think that's the first thing. The second thing is, you got to tell your quarterback that, listen, here's the reality, son, you're going to get hit. Whether you like it or not, you're going to get hit, and you cannot get rid of the ball too soon because you're afraid of getting hit. Or you're afraid of getting injured. You got to stay in the pocket, and sometimes you got to deliver the ball and get hit. And as this season has progressed, Pete, he has gotten better at that. But it's not, if he wants to be elite, right, he has to be elite. And the elite guys take what defenses give them, and they stand in the pocket, and they allow the stuff to develop downfield. I mean, there were several occasions where you got Christian Watson in the middle of the field, and he just throws to the wrong guy, trying to get the ball out too quickly. You got to stand in there. And I think the other thing that they need to do is they need to engage play action pass and get the quarterback rolling around. If he's afraid to stand in the pocket, then roll him out where he's not in the pocket and make it easier. Now you're cutting the field in half, and you're going to have three layers or three levels, as some people speak. So you got your short level, you got your intermediate, and you got a deep shot over the top. And, you know, those plays are going to start to develop a little bit more, but you got to run them.
you see any hope? Well, first thing I was going to ask you was, I always thought, when he first became the starter, that actually one of his strengths was he was willing to stand in there. Now, maybe that was just compared to Aaron Rodgers, maybe that's, was kind of the reference point. I'm not sure. Or do you think that getting injured against the Eagles, do you think that affected him?
I really do. I mean, ever since when he came back from that injury last year, he was not as comfortable in the pocket. And I'll tell you what, as much as maligned as that offensive line is, they are doing a pretty good job protecting the quarterback. There was one egregious one at the end of the game where on the fumble that Jordan Love had. I mean, Josh Jacobs.
The end of the second quarter, yeah.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs didn't do him any favors there. So they got some things that they got to do to clean up. But I mean, the reality is this: just do what you're doing, but just be a little bit more patient and don't be so excited to get rid of the football so quickly. And I think he'll be okay. And if they want to, maybe the other thing too is to be a little bit more successful running the football and take some of the heat off of him. But right now, with the current way that they're attacking the run game, they just don't have the horses up front to pull it off. So they got to change that a little bit.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Is there any hope for that run game? I mean, it's been half a season now, and I'm sure they've tried, some different things, and they've certainly tried to stick with it, but it just ain't working.
Well, it's a great question. I think the way to make it work at this point is go back to 2023 and 2024 when you were pulling linemen, on everything. Getting those guys – listen, offensive linemen, you ask them what's their favorite run block, they're going to tell you right now, down block, because you have the angle on the defender and you just have to execute. And so when you're down blocking and pulling linemen, I mean, it gets the offensive linemen lathered up, and it gets the defense frustrated. So if I were standing in front of that whiteboard, what we would do is we would run a lot of plays where we're going to be pulling linemen and give those guys the opportunity, because what's happening right now are two things. They try to run the ball on a shotgun. Those linemen are sitting there they're in a pass heavy set rather than a run heavy set. So what I mean by that is they don't have if you look at the way they set up in shotgun versus the way they set up when they're under center and they got their hands on the ground and they're leaning forward and they're going forward to attack. Offensive linemen love that. When you're asking me to run block out of a pass set, it's just more difficult. So these RPOs and stuff that they're running, or like what the Packers like to do, you'll see them run. They'll have a run play, and then on the away from where they're going to hand the ball off to, they run something the other way. Sometimes it's a bubble screen. Sometimes it's a slant. One of those kind of things where the Love will hang on to the ball and whip it out there to the edge or the perimeter. And I think that's pretty hard on this offensive line. I think they got to just line up. And if you're gonna run the ball on fourth and one, get your lineman down in a heavy set, get under center and run the ball.
I did not like, I don't like to pick apart play calls too much, because there's just so much we don't know about, what's going on there, what they're thinking, the information they have, all that. But fourth and one, I was shocked when they lined up in shotgun, or I'm sure it was probably pistol, but you got to be under center there though. Amongst other things, you got the threat. You can quarterback sneak it if they don't pack in three guys right in the middle,
Correct. If they don't, if it's fourth and one and you got, your defensive tackles are in twos or threes. I mean, that's a quarterback's and your Mike Backer is not, he's at a 30 depth, that's perfect. But if he's at zero and he's lined up right on the center, what makes it, you might change your mind a little bit, but I think the biggest issue is they're sitting there in shotgun and all of their linemen are sitting there with their weight on their feet rather than nothing on their hands. And then you got arguably some of the best defensive tackles in the league, and you're going to try and be aggressive on a fourth down run. That, to me, that's a recipe for failure.
You know, I never have asked you this, but if you're in shotgun or pistol, why can't the linemen still put their hand on the ground?
They certainly can. But in that situation, when I was 4th and 1 there at the end of the game, they were sitting in the pass set. It's awful hard to run block out of that. I mean, you're asking your offensive linemen to do something that they're not. And first of all, their pad level is terrible anyway. Their two guards, their pad level was just awful all night long, and those D linemen had the leverage the entire game. I mean, they're on a running play. They're walking their offensive guards back. I mean, you saw Banks get walked back. Morgan get walked back continually. You can't be successful with that. So get their hands in the ground and juice them up and get after it.
I'm not sure if you saw the stories, because I didn't actually, because it's so chaotic. And after these night games, I didn't even see it. But Jacobs basically said the Eagles knew, because apparently the Packers had run that play from, no huddle a couple times. And the Eagles knew what was coming. And he could hear a defensive lineman calling out, inside zone, left, I think he even said. So that Philadelphia knew the play that was coming.
Yeah. And actually, if Jacobs would have ran it, it probably would have picked it up. But he decided to cut back away from it, and it didn't go. Ryan got a really good block on the tackle there, and because he got initial penetration, and then Ryan buried him. And if Jacobs probably would have ran it that way to the offense on the left side, it probably would have picked it up. But in the heat of the battle, you hear a guy screaming, "The play's coming right where you're supposed to go." You're probably going to try and do something a little different. That's what he did. And that was a big loss.
That's exactly what he said. Basically, he didn't say that he would have gotten it if he kept going, but he said he changed the way he ran because he knew that they knew what was coming.
Yep. So that was a tough deal there. But again, you know what? Get your lineman with their, get them in there, get them rooting out instead of sitting them up there on their haunches like that. It's just things like that. They're just not connecting, and they ran the one boot pass, and it was the first play of the game was a run play where they, or it was in the, it was, yeah, I think it was the first play of the game, and Christian Watson runs a short motion and he leads up between the tackle and tight end to block. And then when they ran that play action, that boot pass, it was the same look. Everything was the same. Christian Watson took the short motion, ran between the tackle to go up and block a linebacker. And you saw, so that forced Bond to have to, he had to play run there because the tight end was engaging him. And then the tight end, after 2 seconds, breaks off and, he's open in the flat for six, it was a 6-yard gain. You look further downfield, you got 9 that is going to break open. And you run these plays more frequently, instead of telling Watson, hey, it's do a 15-yard out, do a 10. And there's a huge gap between the linebacker and the D back in front of them or behind them. So everything isn't just, it's just not flowing nice. Sometimes, they just got to get back to basics, and if your offensive line is struggling when you're trying to zone block up front and you're getting walked back, just pull your guys, give the offensive line the advantage and pound them. I mean, there's nothing better than seeing the end man on the line of scrimmage come walking out and you're got a full head of steam. That's an offensive lineman's dream. I'm going to just pace this guy and we're going to get some good yards here. But, there was that sequence there that started in the second quarter. It was the second quarter where they were kind of doing a little bit of that, and then it just, disappeared. Just was like, what is going on? So they get Jacobs up the gut inside zone, then they pull a bunch of guys and Jacob goes off for another 5, and then they motion the tight end to the backfield to a fullback position. He leads up through the hole, just old fashioned run football, and it goes around, comes out of the chute for 11 yards. They run the play action pass, and then they come back to zone up the middle for a yard or 2 yards, and then it's -5, and now it's 4th and 2. What do you do? It's just really sad that this is where they're at.
One thing that jumped out to me, and, you know, we were sitting next to each other during the game. You know, I was kind of borderline stunned that they kept putting Bo Melton out there. And, you know, LaFleur basically said afterwards they wanted him out there. You know, he didn't say because they were missing Golden, but you could tell that was, you know, the reason. So they had another, you know, because of his ability to stretch the field. But Melton is such a small target. I don't know. If I'm a defensive coordinator and Bo Melton's out there, I'm not afraid of his speed. For one thing, I don't think he runs 4.34, which is incredibly fast. I've never got the sense he plays quite that fast. And I don't know. I would not fear him at all on deep balls. And so it just makes no sense to me that they didn't have Malik Heath out there, who's at least a really big, you know, bigger imposing guy who can catch the ball over the middle. I don't know if, I don't know if what you think of that, but I, you know, especially because Melton's been playing defense all season too. But I think I'd have Heath out there either way.
I think he's kind of proven that you don't even need to cover him. You can catch it anyway.
Yeah, with the drops. Yeah.
Oh God, come on. You know, it's painful to watch. You know, like it is. Honestly, it's painful because you got, you know, it hits him between the 1 and the 6. I mean, really? I mean, that's not even high school football. You know what I mean? I mean, kids are going to catch that.
I'll say this for Jordan Love. He does not show up his guys when they let him down like you know who he used to.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because they cut to the camera cut to him a couple times after the drops, and he just had this really stoic look on his face. But I mean, he just it was at least a third down, so that would
fourth and nine.
Yeah, for that, yeah, it was fourth down. I mean, that's just, you know, that's taking points off the board. Those are backbreakers.
100%. Yeah, you can't have that kind of stuff happen, and unfortunately.
That's how you end up. So yeah. You end up with 7 points, I guess.
Yeah, the other part you didn't even talk about, Christian Watson.
I mean, oh, I'm glad you brought that up.
It bounces off the back of his helmet. Son, you're a receiver. Catch that ball. Go run up in the stands. Jump up there. Get beer spilt on you. And that's what you want to do. Trying to break up that pass. That's the difference between, you know, and this has got to come down to coaching. But that's the difference you between like look at Justin Jefferson, and you can name a handful of guys. They're going up and getting that ball. They're not going to try it. They're not going to turn their back and try and break it up and then have the ball bounce off the back of his helmet. How embarrassing. That is embarrassing football. And those kind of follies have got to stop. And I don't know. Again, I receivers coach, hey, you got to go get the football. I can't imagine they're not talking about that. So then there's a fall down to, you know, by all means, it sounds like Christian Watson's a pretty intelligent guy. It's just inexplicable. You know, too many of these stupid things are happening that this coaching staff talks, oh, we got to clean it up. We got to clean it up. Yep. We got to make some fixes. Well, guess what? You got 7 games left. And you're hanging on to a playoff spot by the thread. And these things have got to stop. You can't continue to keep saying you got to fix it. They actually got to get fixed.
You know, I did not notice that watching live. And when I'm sure I looked up at the replay, and they didn't, at least when I was looking, they never showed the replay, a real close-up replay. Maybe they did, and I just missed it. But it wasn't until I watched the All-22 – I mean, that ball, you're right. It hit, I mean, it literally hit him in the back of the helmet. And if he turns and catches, you know, especially, you know, I don't know, he must not have been thinking this before the snap, but if they intercepted, it was like 3rd and 10 or something like that. It was third down for sure. If they intercept it, so what? You know, it's just like punting.
Right.
So go get the ball. What a different game that would have been if they score on that, drive. Cause that was the first drive, right?
Right.
So it's 7-0 instead of 0-0 right off the bat. That was, you know, it's just a couple plays like that are the difference between winning and losing in this league.
Correct.
Let's jump to the other side of the ball. Man, Saquon Barkley, what was it, 22 or 20, maybe it was 23 for 60 yards? I mean, that's how you beat that team, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that team, they gave up 10 points, Pete.
Yeah, right.
You know, to an explosive offense that all of a sudden, you know, the last couple of weeks, you know, before their bye week, put points up. Not good. Not good at all.
You know, the one guy I want to talk about before anybody, just because, you know, when I do these weekly chats, I've gotten questions about Evan Williams because he's had a couple plays, completions on him where, you know, and I think fairly, you know, big chunk plays where he's, you know, he's almost made the play and people are wondering, you know, is this guy just not quite good enough? But he had the breakup where he almost, you know, instead of almost not making the play, he just made the play a couple weeks ago. This game he gave up the touchdown. And that one, it was another one. I mean, that was just barely up past over his fingertips. But looking at the tape, he had a really, really good game, as you pointed out. Can you go into what you saw there that impressed you?
His ability, you know, I thought he was close to the ball and made the breakups that were really important. But was very, very, very sound in his responsibilities. You know, it's really easy to get turned around on occasion, but, you know, it's a combination of a lot of things. You know, it's not just what you do in a practice field. It's how much time you spend watching video and understanding the guys that you're playing and the concepts that they're trying to accomplish on offense. And being in the right spot is crucial to being successful on the field on game day. And, you know, so all those things come together and you get that. That's what helps make a good player or an average player to a good player and a good player to a great player. And consistency is the other point too. You know, if you can make a play on five plays, but on five, you can give up five touchdowns. That's not, you know, obviously that's not very good either. So the bottom line is being able to be consistent and being in the right position.
Yeah, he tied for second in tackles and for the game with six for the Packers. You know, and sometimes that doesn't tell you much because safeties, a lot of times they're making tackles, you know, 5 to 15 yards downfield. But he was a lot of his tackles where he was shooting up into gaps and making tackles at the line of scrimmage. That's what really jumped out rewatching the game to me. Cause you know, he had the one in the fourth quarter where it must've been a run blitz and he came up and dropped Barkley for a 1 yard loss, but he had a bunch of other one plays too, where he was shooting up there. He just looked really quick and like a really sure tackler. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, he made that really big play in the backfield there where he shot up from, you know, the safety position, but a lot of that too is understanding your run fit responsibilities and just playing within yourself. You know, you saw last week against Dowdle where, you know, he got out of position. You know, that didn't happen. So obviously he was able to learn from those mistakes, be in position the right time. You know, he had the one touchdown that was the guy that he was guarding, and, you know, those things are just part of life as a D-back. But what I like D-backs are guys that are going to come up and shoulder up on a tackle. And he certainly did that.
That's right. I forgot. He was responsible for, he got out of his gap on that run against Carolina that set up the game-winning field goal. But I still think, you know, he's one of those guys, he's one of those young guys. I think he's a keeper. I think he's a guy that they're going to have to sign to a second contract. If I'm them, I'm really happy I drafted that guy. I don't know. That's just me, but I think he's a very good player.
Me too. 100%. He's in the right spots. And not only that, but he's impactful when he gets there. And that's the key part.
So what do you think? What are the prospects for this team? You know, every week we talk about this a lot of weeks and it kind of roller coasters with the performance, but what do you think of it? You know, you think back to the Super Bowl team, they were 6-6 at one point, the 2010 team, and they won the Super Bowl. I think they played better football than this team has been playing, you know, even though they were 6-6, they had better stretches of football than this team has had. But what do you think of the prospects, these guys' prospects for, you know, from between now and January?
You know, they certainly had the talent. It's whether or not they got the leadership to bring it all together. And that's the part where it's a little bit, you don't have a good feeling, right? You're 10 games in, you're not feeling like this is going to be, you know, something that's going to just all but magically come together. But the other thing that's got to happen is, you know, not a lot of people are talking about it. Everybody wants to focus on the offensive line, but the quarterback has got to make better decisions on where he goes with the football.
So let's, you made a call out to listeners to give us some questions, and we got a bunch here. Let's try to get through a few of them before we run out of time. So we've got a question from Spencer. Do you think it's worth giving guard snaps to Belton or Kennard?
No, I don't. I think those guys are tackles. I think they're better off. I think the lineup that they run out there right now with Ryan, Banks and Morgan, both of those guys are probably better suited for, obviously they're better suited to play guard physically. However, I don't think Belton's has the right body type for a guard. And Kennard, I think, you know, his role is a tackle. And I think it would be unwise to put those guys in those spots.
Banks is having a rough time.
Yikes. Not very good. That was a huge disappointment because when at San Fran, it seemed like he was just a road grader and a mauler. And they, you know, at this point in the season, they got to rethink that and what they're going to do. Can he be successful? Most certainly. But I think they, like I said earlier, they're going to have to do something different with their schemes. And they're going to have to start going back to old school gap blocking and pulling guys.
Be interesting to see if Matt LaFleur starts moving the run game in that direction this week. Here's a question from Paulie. Why are the Packers keeping two kickers on the roster when they're going to play the hurt one anyway?
I can't answer that. Other than the fact that you got a guy that kicked a 61-yarder and you don't want to expose him to waivers. That's the only thing. You know, there could be a bad team out there that wants a kicker. At this point in the season, I don't know if you're going to make too many changes there, but insurance maybe, I guess the other one. You don't know how long that leg is going to hold out. I mean, he could re-injure it tomorrow, and now you're going on the waiver wire looking for kickers again, you know. So I think there's a fear there that if they try to cut them and put them on the practice squad that they're going to lose them to waivers, and then, you know, if something happens, they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, or even that's the only thing I could think of too. Or even they cut him and he makes it through waivers, then they put him on the practice squad, and then in 3 weeks a team, maybe even a good one, loses its kicker and signs him off their practice squad. He's not going to turn that down.
No.
They might be – I don't know for sure what they think of him, but, you know, if I'm them, I want to keep him around and have him – competing next year for the job, because, you know, maybe this guy's good enough where he can be their kicker for the next 5 years. I don't think McManus is because of age, you know, he's probably going to age out of it. So, maybe they'll want to transition to this guy next season. So I think they'll probably try to keep him on the roster until they absolutely have to have that roster spot. With injuries, maybe they'll never, with guys going on IR and stuff, maybe they'll never need it.
Right.
Say Cheese asks, I keep telling myself that there is plenty of talent on offense and Matt has proven to be a good coach. They can figure it out. Am I lying to myself?
Can they figure it out? I think there certainly is a pathway forward. It's going to be whether or not they have, you know, you got to look, be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, you know what I'm doing right now is not working and I got to do something different. And that's a really difficult thing to do. Especially at that level. you know, those coaches got there for a reason, and they want to do what they want to do. But I think the really elite coaches look at where they're at and make the tough calls and to make the changes that are necessary to win. And that's where they're at, and whether or not they are able to pull that trigger or not. And I think it's a hard position to be in if you're, you know, Policy and Gutekunst, because you got a pretty young roster and you invested in Micah Parsons to turn the ship over and throw out the contents and start over. It's tough. I think it would be if they had to make a change at the coaching staff level, I think it would be an attractive place to come. Certainly there's a lot of pieces there that can be really, really good when they put them all together. So can they pull together? I wish I had a magic crystal ball to look into and say, yes, for sure. But I think the pieces are there. It's whether or not they're going to be able to pull the trigger on it. And the biggest issue is you got to get to the quarterback, I think, and tell him, hey, listen, getting hit's part of the game. You got to stay in the pocket, and you got to, you know, you got to let some of these plays develop before you get rid of the ball.
Let's see. We've got Gerard. Have a feeling if the Giants, this kind of goes with what you were just saying. Have a feeling if the Giants win big against Pack, could be LaFleur's last game. Notice Sean Ryan questioning, saying, why aren't we the aggressors instead of reactionaries? I've been questioning LaFleur's head coaching abilities for several years. I guess there's not a question there, but
more of a statement,
This is a huge, it's pretty rare when teams skate through a season and go 15-2 and have very few problems all year. And then you do it like Detroit last year, and then you lose in the playoffs anyway in your first playoff game. So then you got a whole new set of questions that you're answering. So it's, you know, a lot of teams go through some major ups and downs. This is the real test of the NFL. 17 games against teams where the margins are not between good and bad are not that big. And when things go bad, you got to keep them together. And it can be really hard to do. And you got to find ways to make things work when what you've been doing and what you planned on doing aren't work. This is where these guys, this is where they make their money. And we'll see what LaFleur and the staff, what they're made of in the second half of the season. I mean, this is a huge test, right?
Oh my gosh. Yes. They got to come out and they got to put their foot on their throats right out of the gate. You know, you got a defense, you got to get the first series, you got to get a stop, and a first series on offense, you got to score. And that will probably make everybody feel a lot better. But if they go through there and they go through the first half and score 3 points, now it's now everybody, including the players, are going to be, God, more of the same. Here we go. So it's got to be, they got to be ready to go right out of the chute, and they can't hesitate. It has to be 10, 12 plays drive, score a touchdown, stop them on 6 plays, and now everybody's feeling good. But it's crucial at this point for this football team to be able to keep it together.
Well, maybe they'll catch a break and they'll get an old Russell Wilson instead of a young and seemingly promising Jackson Dart at quarterback. I haven't seen anything about what his chances are of returning from concussion this week, but he got knocked out of last week's game because of a concussion. A final question from Steve. Will LaFleur pass play calling to Stenovich?
No.
I don't think so either.
Never. It'll never happen. The only thing, those things only happen when you're getting pressure from upstairs, and I don't expect that to happen.
Yeah, they. I mean, the history of that is so – I mean, McCarthy, you know, did it in the offseason that 1 year. Well, I don't know what year it was, 2013 or whatever it was, 2012, and took it back halfway through the season. I mean, we just saw Dan Campbell taking the play calling. He hadn't done it since his first year as coach, and he took over the play calling starting last week. There was a defensive head coach, I'm blanking on who it was, who just took over the play calling for his team. You know, play calling is one of the things that got LaFleur the job. And so these guys just aren't going to give that up, even though it does distract them from the overall game management. I don't know, if you were a head coach, what would you, would you call you're a defensive guy. Would you call the defensive plays, or would you have a coordinator do it?
I'd have a coordinator do it, but I'd have a heavy hand in it during the week.
Yeah, and sure. It does seem like defensive oriented heads, head coaches who came up on defense, they're a little more willing to give that up, I think, than the offensive guys are.
Yeah, of course.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground here, Eric, and we've run out of time, so we'll wrap it up here. Just want to say thanks to everybody for listening. Glad you think we're worth the time for downloading. Remind you, we'll be back again next week to talk about the Packers game against the New York Giants out in New York. I hope you have a good week until then. For Eric, I'm Pete. Just want to say thanks again, and you've been listening to the After Further Review podcast. Take care,
everybody. Be good, everybody. Be good.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro Plan free for 1 year. And use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there, because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more, and sign up. Terms apply.